please tell me that my audio is normal now.
Yeah, I genuinely couldn't make out what you were saying.
Oh my goodness.
I almost want to find, I hope the recording got saved anyway, so I can send it to you.
I would love to hear what that sounds like, but it's also like very concerning that all of a sudden I sounded like a cartoon character.
You sounded like Tweety Bird and the Chipmunks had a baby.
Okay.
Okay.
Do you want to start?
Are you ready for this?
Yes. I think so.
We got a tweet.
We got a tweet?
We got a tweet.
Wait, I probably saw it. Didn't I? I saw it.
And, okay, I need to make sure I have 100% of your attention.
What else would I be doing?
I don't know.
Okay. Yes?
So I have 100% of your attention.
Yes.
Okay. Something fatty, something crunchy, something sour, something sweet.
Who is this from?
Okay.
If this is from your mom.
So.
And she suddenly remembered. Okay.
No. I don't think she listens to the podcast.
Can you repeat it? I need to imprint this on my brain forever.
Oh, I already wrote it down. So, something fatty, which refers to like a dairy, or you could even get away with like avocado. This is normally like a cheese or feta cheese or something like that. Something fatty, right?
Okay.
Something crunchy, which would be like a crouton or some nuts or seeds or something crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
Something sour refers to like acidy things like a lime or a lemon or vinegar or something like that.
Okay.
And something sweet, which could even be like a tomato, or sometimes fruits are quite good in salads.
Yeah, blueberries.
Yeah, or strawberries, or like those, what is it, like the little red thing called again?
Cranberries?
No, like you could cut it like an orange, but it's full of these little like red seeds. What's it called again?
If you cut up like grapefruit? No. What? I have no idea what you're talking about. Is fruit different in London?
I don't know. Anyway, so
I am so happy that we have the formula. Who is this from? Who is this like mystery amazing tweet from? I did not see this, okay. Or else I would have freaked out immediately.
I know. I actually, about 2 hours ago, I messaged you to be like, hey, are we still on for the recording tonight? Just obviously, this is useful information for myself. And you were like, yeah, sorry, I'm really caught up with work, but like, I'll be ready when we're supposed to record. And I was like, haha, perfect. Because I had just seen Andrea, sorry if I'm pronouncing that name wrong, who tweeted us all the way from Brazil saying she was listening to the podcast. And then she found a YouTube video from Jamie Oliver called, you guessed it, Salad Principles.
Oh my goodness. Thank
you. So I watched the video and then I was able to reverse engineer my way from his information to like the memory trick from my mom.
Okay. I know who Andrea is. Thank you so much, Andrea.
Really?
I met her in San Francisco. She's super lovely. And we were a part of the same group there of international women who were looking to make friends. So I am so happy that she listened and that she did the research because this is really incredible news for us and for everyone else that we left totally hanging for like two episodes. So thank you so much for solving all of our problems, Andrea.
Yeah. So that was the first item of follow-up. I love when we now have listeners who are helping us grow, basically.
I really appreciate this. Mm-hmm. Okay, next item.
Yeah, do you want to do the next one?
Yeah, well, this should be super quick. We've mentioned the Daily Stoic so many times, and we mentioned that we're both part of a group with some contacts. However, I also found there is a huge, like a super huge Daily Stoic Facebook group that's open to anyone. So we're going to put the links in the show notes. So if you are interested in talking to people about the Daily Stoic, this is totally the place to do it. I think they have like 4,000 members.
Yeah, it's actually nice. Sometimes I see something in my Facebook feed and I'm like, oh, that's lovely. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, it's from the Daily. Sorry. Who else on my Facebook would post something like that? So, yeah, so the next one I actually saw, I think I mentioned on the podcast, a book called How to Be an Imperfectionist, which was about like not being so hard on yourself, basically.
Yep.
And how to just like don't let... I think I've mentioned this so many times, like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good and all these things. And then I saw on Instagram, somebody called it like the day after perfect, like, and they were saying done is better than perfect. And they were actually recommending a book called Finish by John Acuff. So I just thought that was really nice. I don't really have anything more to add to that. I just thought it was nice that this like message of anti-perfectionism is spreading, because I think it's... perfectionism can actually be kind of counterproductive, because you're like limiting yourself by only doing things if you can do them completely perfectly, where it's actually better just to get things done.
I like that.
All right, so do you have any password follow-up for us?
Yes, I do. The time came around with the password manager and they started charging me money, so I'm committed now. It would have been a hassle to go back through all of these crazy secure passwords that they created for me and create new ones and then get all of those done. So I've just added everything. I'm completely committed to this password manager. I do feel a lot safer now that I have it. And I'm using 1Password, and I really like their setup and the way that they organize it. And like, their web app is great and the iPhone app is great. So yes, I was not sure what was going to happen with that, but I am committed to a password manager, which is forever going to change my New Year's password changing, because I suppose I don't need to do that anymore.
Oh my God, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Even though I'm slightly like, oh God. Because I've actually had on my list 1Password, that specific app to look at for quite some time.
Yeah. There are a lot of password managers that I think they're one of the most popular. And I know a lot of people that I work with also use them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, maybe next up, it'll be you talking about password management. You can have stress.
Oh my God. I actually remember why I turned off my two-factor authentication. And it's just because this happened to me literally the other day when we were doing the show notes or releasing the last episode. And I was on some like unstable Wi-Fi. So Google was like, okay, you need to double verify this. And it went through like my Icelandic phone and on my UK phone. And this is such a like, I almost don't want to dwell on this, but I just have so many different devices and so many different accounts for everything. So I would probably just need to take a whole day where all I would do would be to like re-log into everything.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. My browser also like clear cookies between sections, so I'm always like logging in again to everything.
Which I find crazy.
Yeah, most people find that crazy. It also makes all of the ads I get kind of bad, because they just give me like the general stuff and not the super targeted stuff, and I'm like it's kind of weird.
I think that's funny that you mentioned that about two-factor authentication, because I have never had a problem with that except when I was visiting you in London over the holidays and I needed to log into something. I needed two-factor authentication and my phone didn't have service in your apartment, but then also the service was just slower because I was running on an international plan and I had to go stand out on your balcony until I got my two-factor authentication password. So I can totally see how this is a challenge, but that's only happened to me once. This isn't like a regular occurrence.
See, I have some kind of two-factor authentication bad karma around me. Also, this is just going to make me sound so annoying because I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I got, some people know I got iPhone X over the holidays, and it went from being like, yay, new phone, to spending like 40 minutes logging into all of my Google accounts, because all like on different two-factor authentication, and because some of them still are. And then my phone was basically unusable that I had to set up all of my Google accounts, because it kept sending these really aggressive notifications being like, type in your password for this email address. And I was like, I'm working on it, Google. Be kind, please.
I think that having multiple Google accounts is such a problem. I don't even think we can talk about it right now, because we probably both have too much to say. But I just want to mention it in case other people have a similar experience and maybe it can be a future topic.
It is.
And there are some tricks. Maybe we could do that in the future.
We could do it. I almost had a heart because I have too many for my own personal preference.
Yeah.
And then my colleague, who is probably like a generation older than me and has been involved in a lot of different projects throughout his life, I saw his like Google login screen thing. And I'm not making this up, Haley. He had like 30. Like 30, like 30 different accounts. And I almost had a heart attack. And I was like, oh, what is this madness? And he was like, oh, don't you worry. You'll get there.
That's not exciting. That's terrifying.
Yeah. So this is also why I saw on Twitter somebody was asking if I use a mail client. They weren't asking me specifically. They were just asking their Twitter people if they use a mail client. And I was like, yeah, because otherwise all I would do every single day was log in and out of Google accounts. So of course I use a mail client and of course I use a calendar client just so things feed through there and I don't have to re-log in and out of Google all the time unless it's like a very specific thing.
That could take up so much of your day.
And then with me and my cookies cleared all the time, it's literally no. I would just never read my emails. That would be the consequence, just because I didn't want to lie.
Which you can't do. So mail clients.
Yeah. Mail clients. Recommend them.
This next item of follow-up you added, and I have no idea why, so I'll let you take over.
Okay, is this the OmniFocus versus Todoist?
Yeah, I mean, this comes up every time, so I'm not surprised, but I was wondering what you were going to say about it.
Okay, so I don't know if you're going to get mad with me, maybe.
how bad is this?
Because I've seen this, you don't just do this to me, but you do this to quite a few of your Twitter people, where you're like, you're not only on the Todoist train, but you're like, wanting to bring people on it with you.
Oh no, it's just you. I do that too.
Yeah, so you have gotten me like a code so I can like try it for free for like 3 months or something.
You have people from Todoist who tweet you also that you should be using it as well, so I'm not the only one.
Yeah, and I've quite consciously decided to not switch.
Is this a final decision?
I'll get to it, but like, unless there's like a really good reason for me to switch, which I don't see what it would be, I'm not gonna switch.
I think that's fair, because if you're set in your ways and you understand, like if you have a system that's working for you, it is very much an upheaval of your life to switch to a different system. So I entirely understand. Does this mean that I should send my 3 months of free Todoist to someone else if you're not going to use it?
Yeah, you should.
Okay. I'll have to find another person to pressure into joining Todoist.
I wonder what kind of cult operation they're running over there at Todoist, since like you're such like an ambassador for them.
I feel like that may just be how I am, because my brother made this remark to me once. I was like, I love them so much. I was talking about my phone carrier and I was like, I love them so much that like I would tell other people about them. And he was like, you're like that with everything. And I was like, no, I'm not. And he's like, yes, you are. I know all of the apps that you like because you tell everyone which apps they should be using. Okay, so much ones that you like. So I think I may just have that like ambassador-y type of personality where when I really like something and someone is looking to accomplish something, if I know the solution based on my own use, I'm very keen to let them know what my solution is in case it might work for them. One example is I once traveled to Northern Canada to visit a friend and in a 2-day period signed 4 of her friends up for Trello. So I was like, wow, okay, well, I do really like Trello, I suppose. I hadn't realized it until I started talking to people.
But I think this comes from a good place, because it comes from a like, oh, I have a solution that could work for you. And it comes from like wanting to be helpful. Like, I think this is a good quality.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I think it's good that you've decided on OmniFocus versus Todoist, because without deciding, it's very easy for that to become a constant thing that is in the back of your mind when you're using OmniFocus. And that just pops up and is a little distracting, not enough to be super noticeable, but it takes away a slight amount of brain power. So I'm glad that you've decided, because I can imagine that has afforded you some relief.
Yeah, and actually this kind of leads into something I think we want to talk about a little bit more, which is almost about like the meta system of work, which is not just, I know this is a little bit awkward terminology, but like not just, oh, I use OmniFocus as my to-do list, but almost as like your approach to it, or like why you're using it, which I just think could be like an interesting conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's interesting that you call it the meta system. I'd be curious to know where you got that term. I think of it as systems and processes that I use to run my life.
Yeah. So, okay. This is going to take quite a lot of explaining.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going anywhere.
So, I hope I'm able to explain myself well. But if I'm not being clear at some point, please just ask me so I'm able to clarify. But there's this phenomenon I've noticed myself for quite a long time, which is how, especially you see this really clearly when you have somebody really successful, and let's say they're giving like a presentation or something to, especially if it's quite like a junior audience, not junior as in children, but like junior in their field, or wanting to join a field, or students or somebody like that. And I've noticed this like in loads of different fields where it's almost like the speaker gets annoyed with the question they're getting because they're not getting questions about the work itself. They're getting questions about the mechanics. So they're getting questions like, let's say you're a writer. They get questions like, what writing app do you use? Or something like that. And they're kind of like, yeah, sure, it matters. Like, it has to have some basic features that are required for this kind of heavy duty writing. But that's the extent of how much it matters. Being a writer is not just like, oh, I picked the right writing app. It's like the writing app is a tool, but like the process of writing is a lot bigger. And I don't know. Yeah. So this is really easy to explain with like music. So I sometimes see this when you have like a really successful songwriter or something, and he's maybe giving a talk to musicians who want to be songwriters or something. And the questions are like, what microphone do you use, or something like that, where it's like, you don't write a good song with a good microphone. Like, a good songwriter is able to use their iPhone and still write a good song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That makes total sense. I think those are both really good examples.
Yeah, so this was just something I'd noticed, and I was not really able to articulate it in my brain really well. And then I don't remember if it was you or me that came across this article, which I thought was kind of like a typical, oh, let me write on Medium something, blah, blah, blah. But it was actually really, sorry, I should have said that. it was this article by a man called Michael Simmons.
Yep.
And it's, the title of the article is Self-Made Billionaire. There are 3 levels of reality, and most people are stuck in level 1, but they have no idea.
I think that, so you shared this link in our Slack, and I was slightly hesitant to click on it purely because of the Self-Made Billionaire title. That just, to me, sounds so cheesy and wannabe entrepreneur-y, and there's just so much content like that out there that I wasn't, that those first 3 words had me pause. But the rest of it, the levels of reality, was quite interesting. So I did click through, and I'm glad I did. It's a longer read, but it's so interesting. So
yeah, this is the typical business BS that I'm not a huge fan of, which is like the, let me explain to you how you also can do this exceptionally amazing thing, especially if, anyway, so I thought this was one of these things. I don't know where I came across this, but the article itself is quite technical, but I found it really valuable. And so the way in my mind, how it worked for me to think about it, was almost more like planes. So like the first plane that everybody knows is like the getting things done plane, which is like the daily grind where like you go to work and you, you know, go to the shops and you get some food and you cook dinner and like you go somewhere in the evening or whatever. And that's like the to-do list and that's the kind of like mechanics of the thing.
Yeah.
And then there's like this next level, which is called principles, which I don't know if that's the best name for it, but it's almost more on this like one level above where you're thinking about like, okay, wait, what am I trying to achieve? And how can I set up something that works for me? And so I recently watched this lecture Paul Graham, who I've mentioned on the podcast before, gave, where he was having the same thing, where he was talking to like would-be entrepreneurs. And it was so clear in this talk. He had like a 20-minute Q&A section at the end where he was almost disappointed by everybody's question because everybody was asking him like, oh, how do I raise like a second round and how do I do this and this? And he was like, make a good product, get users, and raising money becomes easy.
Yeah.
But nobody was asking like, how do I make sure my thing is good?
Yep.
So, okay. So now I'm going to get back to me. So this kind of like getting things done level is...
Wait, are you going to talk about the third level? There are three levels.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so you talked about level one and level two, which you were calling planes for a second, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, sorry, this is... Okay. This is... I swear this will all make sense, hopefully.
Okay, over to you.
Level three was kind of beyond me, so I'm not even going to talk about it. It's called algorithms, which is about something I don't fully understand. So I'm not really going to talk about that. I'm just going to talk about like those first two, which is like the day-to-day things that like whatever emails you're getting and phone calls and whatever you're responsible for doing. And then it's like this almost next level up, which is about like setting yourself up so you're able to do your work, basically.
Yes. If I can try and explain level three algorithms really quickly. There was a diagram in the post, and so you can definitely, listeners will be able to go read this themselves and see what they think. But there was one picture that really helped me, and they talk about how algorithms are something along the lines of, if A happens, then you can apply B, which is a principle that you've learned, by doing an action to get an outcome. And that is the algorithm. Like, you've learned how to do things. So that's the one level. The second level is you're learning about the way that you're doing things and you are learning principles that are often more valuable than the immediate result because you can apply them for the rest of your life to make good decisions. And then level three is really applying them, I think.
Yeah, that's, you're actually explaining this to me. This is why it's good to talk about these things.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, the algorithms part is still way over my head, I think, but I grasped it a little bit better with the help of this image and the second time around reading it. But I definitely think that it's just all a really, really interesting concept. And it's interesting. I think they call them mental models, and it's really neat to see how people apply these mental models to their life and how these are ways of changing the way that you look at the world, essentially.
Yeah, this is really interesting. So this year has kind of been off to a weird, crazy start. So I used to have like quite a lot of anxiety maybe like 2 years ago. And then I've been using like systems more and I've been getting better. And it's kind of been like a slow progress where it's one of these things, just like the boiling frog thing, like you don't notice each step along the way.
Yeah.
But then this has happened like more than once. Like I meet somebody and I feel like I'm looking in like at myself from that time where I was just stressed about everything all the time, because I just see somebody and they're just so stressed about everything. And I can't help myself. I'm like, how do you task manage yourself? You know, I ask them like about their own processes and how they, you know, some people don't even use calendar, Haley.
I don't know how these people get through life without writing things down and having a calendar, to be totally honest. I think I would be a mess.
I literally met somebody the other day who I said like, oh, there's this thing that's happening. And it was maybe like in April. And I was like, oh, there's this thing happening in April. You should totally come along. And they were like, oh, you're going to have to remind me closer to the time because I won't remember. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't remember either if I wouldn't have a calendar. You know,
yes.
This is why I have a calendar, so I can have things come up at the appropriate times. You know?
I've done the same thing to people where they're like, oh, can you remind me about this? And my response is, why don't you add it to your calendar? Or do you use a to-do list? Or seriously, iPhones have reminders built in. Do you want to try that? I've been getting very like, you should be able to do this on your own. I'm not going to remind you, to some people.
Yeah, like, and I think it's one thing if this is like, you know, somebody in your life you know, interact with regularly. But when this is like a grown person, especially if they're like running a business or something, and like they don't even use a calendar, I'm like, what are you doing? I don't understand your life. It sounds so stressful. And this was so, yeah, so I've seen these people who are really anxious, and it's like bringing me back to like, oh yeah, I remember how I used to be. And my boss has actually joked that he's noticed the difference in me, where I used to be a lot more like top of mind driven. So if I would get like a message or something, I'd be like, okay, yeah, now, okay, let me do this. And then I got something else and I was like, oh, yeah, let me do this. And like the stress just builds and builds and builds, and you actually don't really get anything done because it's just really stressful.
Yeah.
And then seeing people who are living life like that, I'm like, oh, I understand why you're feeling stressed. Like, I also would be stressed in this situation. And I was having this conversation the other day where I think the reason why I'm so interested in systems and things, and the reason I started using OmniFocus in the beginning, was exactly because of this. I was trying to build a system that I could trust and that would remind me of things at the right time, which I think like one of my favorite features with OmniFocus is the kind of like calendar mapping. So you're able to assign tasks to times.
Yep.
So for an example, like my bills, not all of my bills go out at the same time. So I just have like every month, all of my bills I'm reminded of the day they are due. So I don't really have to think about any of my bills because I know when they're due, I'll be reminded.
Yep. Todoist does this as well, but go on.
Yeah, the thing is, so this is actually why I kind of came to this conclusion, why I'm like, I wouldn't switch, is because it does the same thing. And what matters is that you have a system.
Yes.
But like with system itself, like then we're getting back down into like the specific mechanics. And oh, you know, I love to talk about the mechanics. But like, I think that's not why it's valuable. Like the difference between Todoist versus OmniFocus is less than the value of having a system in the first place.
I absolutely agree. I'm gonna say, so I heard recently in a podcast that you might have heard this as well. It's a podcast we both listened to called Cortex, and their most recent episode, which I'll link to in the show notes, one of the co-hosts, his name is Gray, he had this wonderful quote, and I was listening to the podcast while doing something else, and I paused so that I could remember it and say it in my head a couple of times. And his quote was, "The work is not the work. The system is the work."
Mm.
And he's talking about how important having a system is to getting work done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that people might not realize, how impactful it can be on your life. I think that my system has stayed not necessarily the same, but it's stayed consistent. And I've made improvements, or I've made changes based on things that have happened. But I've had a system since I was in university. I've had a system for a long time now, because I realized that I couldn't operate at the level that I wanted to operate without having a system for the way that I do my work. I know that I start with the most difficult task. I know that first thing in the morning, I don't check email. There are all sorts of things involved in my system, and even so far as the way that I set up my desk and the way that I set up my home, that is involved with me getting the amount of work to the quality of work that I get done. It's all thanks to the system. If I didn't have these systems in place, I would be a total disaster.
Me too. Like, I would be like a hot mess.
Yeah, I agree.
And I had such a validating experience with this recently because, so I told you how this year has been after this weird start. And so I went to France, we'll get to that later. And when I got back, I the piles of paperwork and life admin of things I had to do was literally the size of the mountains I was skiing down in France.
Oh my gosh.
It was insane. And it was just this stroke of this dumb luck, or a lack of luck, I guess, which was I don't want to get too into it, but just to give kind of some kind of context, it was I was renewing my rent contract. I was, my credit card from Iceland had expired.
Oh, geez.
And I knew this was happening. So when I was in Iceland over the holidays, I went to the bank and I was like, hey, my credit card is going to expire in January. Could I just pick up the new one? Because I knew they were not to be trusted. And they were like, oh, we'll send it to your address in the UK. And I was like, great, thank you. And then I emailed them and I was like, hey, anyway, it was this whole process and my credit card is still not with me.
Oh, geez.
And then there was this other situation, which was with my UK bank card, which I think may have been fraud. Anyway, it was this whole thing. And I was kind of like, okay, I'm just going to close it right away and get a new card. So I have four cards. I have my Icelandic debit card and credit card. And then I have a UK debit card and then a second UK debit card. And this UK card was my main debit card where all of my bills go out of and everything. And then my Icelandic credit cards, those are the two cards I used to pay for things online. And they were both out at the same time. And then I was booking I'm going to America next month, and I was booking tickets not just for myself, but also for people who are not as savvy as I am about booking tickets and stuff. So it was this whole thing. And when I got back from France, I was like, all right, let's start with the first task on the list and start working our way down. It was, I don't know how many items it was because I don't really keep track of that, but it was in the dozens, if not hundreds, of just all sorts of things. And what I just noticed was that I wasn't really stressed about any of it. And it wasn't that long ago where not having my credit card functioning would have freaked me out. But I was just like, oh, you know, bureaucracy is always like this, isn't it? And then I cleared everything I needed to get done. And then this week, I have quite a lot of writing work to do for work.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is quite data analysis and complicated things, and I'm deciding on structural things, and it's quite technical. And because I've cleared everything else out of the way, I've been able to get into deep work mode. When I walk into the office and write again after lunch, I swear I think I've written 10,000 words this week. And it's just such a validating feeling to have built the system over time. This was not the day I downloaded OmniFocus and I instantly had this system. It's just over time to be able to trust the system, because I don't trust myself. This is where the anxiety comes from, clearly. But to trust the system to kind of look after me almost.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I want to distinguish this because I feel like we have a lot of terms flying around.
Okay.
So you and I are talking about systems. We've been talking about systems since day one of this podcast. But the reality levels that were in that blog post, level one, getting stuff done, level two, principles, and level three, algorithms. I think that the reason that we trust our system so much is because it's a principle that we've learned. So level one, getting stuff done, would just be writing the to-do lists and achieving the to-do list. But I think the principle that we've both learned is that when we create systems and really trust them, we're able to achieve more. So that was knowing that the value of creating a system wasn't just in the immediate result of getting stuff done, but it was in the long-term results of being able to work better. But I just want to be clear about all these terms because I feel like we're throwing a lot of them around. I hope that helped.
Yeah, no, that helped me just now because I was, I really wanted to talk about this, but I was also like, okay, this is not maybe the most accessible of topics.
Yeah, I think that, oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I think that for principles, the key thing that they talk about is essentially learning from your mistakes and making sure that you grow from your mistakes. Whereas, so that's level two. Whereas level one is maybe making the same mistakes over and over again or doing the same thing over and over again without getting more out of it. So level two is you get better at things over time, whereas level one is just continuing to do the same even though you aren't necessarily making mistakes or you aren't growing. You're kind of stagnant. That's how I'm seeing it.
Yeah, I actually think that's really interesting. Yeah, you're definitely helping me understand this article better.
That's funny because you were the one that sent it to me.
Like, this is really useful.
And I thought, oh, wow, she grasps this and it's so complicated. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. But yeah, I love what you're saying about systems. And I think that without a system, my life would not be the way that it is right now. And I would not get, just like you're saying, like, we just wouldn't be the same kind of humans. And I think that's because we learned from mistakes in the past when we've had too much going on, or we've learned from mistakes in the past when we've not followed the system. So we've learned the principle of follow the system.
Yeah. Okay, I don't want to throw too much shade because I don't want to be negative, but I just have to mention this. I had this interaction with somebody just this week who explained to me how they woke up in the middle of the night because they just had so much work to do. And I was like, I couldn't even help myself. I was like, that's so bad for you. Like, how do you think this is actually serving your purposes? This is, being sleep deprived is probably the worst thing you could possibly do to yourself.
Yeah.
After this conversation, I looked up like the effects of sleep deprivation.
Oh my goodness.
Just because I wanted to remember. And the one that has stuck with me for a long time, I couldn't find the link for it, but maybe you can, which said the most serious effect of sleep deprivation on yourself is your ability to judge your output.
Yes.
So like, it's not only your work is worse, your ability to judge the quality of your work is also worse.
Yes. I've heard it described as being sleep impaired, which I think is an accurate term.
What does it mean?
Well, when you're impaired, usually it means you're drunk. And so it's like that level of problem with your brain. If you don't get enough sleep, like, it's, that's the, yeah, I know what you mean. So you were looking up the effects of sleep so that you could tell your friend, or?
I don't know why I'm talking about this. It just had me reflecting on like my own systems. And because I remember being stressed and being like more tired all the time because I wasn't taking as good care of myself, it was almost like it just really highlighted the contrast, not to like me and this other person, but to like me and like my past self. Because I remember my past self and I feel so much better now because of all this like trust that is built in. Yeah, that's basically it.
This completely resonates with me. When I lived in the Bay Area, there were several nights in a row that this happened where I woke up, and there was one, at the job I used to work at, there was one day a week where you could be remote.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what happened. This is breaking all of my rules. Like, I have so many rules against this now, but this is breaking all my rules. I don't know what happened, but I would wake up at 3 or 4 a.m., panic that I had slept in, grab my laptop, and start working from bed. And I would do, like, a couple of minutes of work before I realized that, one, it's 4 a.m., and two, I'm working from bed, and that's a rule that I never break anymore. And, like, three, I don't even know why I'm working. And that happened to me several times. Like, that was the level of stress, I suppose, that was in my life, that I thought that as soon as I opened my eyes, I had to start working because that would get me the best output. And I have since learned it differently. And I since do not bring a laptop into bed with me to work. So, but I can totally resonate. Like, that totally resonates with me. I have had the same thing happen. And I think that it's just, it's a process. And if you're not willing to try and improve yourself and get to these deeper levels of reality, you will absolutely get stuck in the level of just getting things done. And that's it. I think that I'm really glad that I've moved on from there, because I would not be friends with past me at this point if I was someone waking up in the middle of the night to do work. Can you even believe that I'm saying this right now? I feel like you know me pretty well, and you can't imagine me doing that.
It's so weird, though. Like, what I think is really striking is that there's some arrogance that goes hand to hand with this attitude, where, like, you're almost proud of yourself for doing that. Like, I'm kind of talking from experience. But, like, and I feel like you and I, let's say we would find something we were doing totally wrong. I feel like both of us would kind of be open enough to hear it and then adjust ourselves.
Yes.
If that makes sense. But I think this kind of, like, I've met quite a few people like that. Like, I met this guy when I was in the States who prided himself in sleeping only 4 hours a night. And I was like, dude, you're just killing yourself. Like, what on earth could you be working on that is worth you looking like you're 45 in your 20s? You know, he didn't, by the way.
Yeah.
But, like, but it's like, and it's really interesting because you see this really clearly in others. Like, when you see somebody else who's working themselves, not even too hard, but just too dumbly. It's not a word, but whatever. It's like, the crazy irony is that, like, maybe busy, sure, is the right way to describe them, but, like, productive is definitely not.
I totally agree. There's an entire thing about this on the internet, and it is trying to demystify the idea that when someone says, how are you, and you respond, I'm really busy, it's something to be proud of, because it isn't. So I think that that is what you're talking about. It's this like tribe of people who believe that the more busy that you are and the more flustered that you are, the more important that you are and the more proud you can be. And I know a lot of people where it is just the opposite. If you are able to relax and balance work and life properly and have time for yourself, then that is something to be proud of. But if you are constantly working and not sleeping enough and really causing harm to your body and to your mind, that is definitely not a pride factor.
Yeah, I genuinely have noticed this about myself. When I hear somebody describe themselves as being really busy, I hear, I don't know how to manage my own time. Like, that's genuinely what I hear. I don't know, like, I feel like I know quite a few people who are doing quite well in their lives, and they don't look like that. Like, they are relaxed, and they are confident, and they just talk to you, and it's like, this busyness is just so... This, like, pride in being busy, I think, is just so damaging. And this kind of arrogance that comes with it, where people, like, are not prepared to listen. I know this because I was like that, where I was like, oh, no, I'm so busy, I can't do anything. So you can't even listen. Like, you can't even listen. That's how busy you are.
Yeah. There was a really great thread on Twitter that happened after someone tweeted that it was right before the holidays, and they tweeted, everyone's about to take time off if you want to get ahead of the curve. Work over the holidays. This was this person's tweet, and a lot of people, my CEO included, responded to that by saying, this is not the way to live life, and I do not agree, and I'm ahead of, like, my competition, I'm doing well for myself, and I don't work holidays. And so I was glad that he responded with that, and I'm very lucky that my entire company closed for 6 days over the holidays. There was just no option of people working over the holidays, at least at our company. So that was really good. But I think that this guy who tweeted, and I'll include the tweet, the thread in the show notes, because it is kind of an interesting conversation to follow. But I think that the person who believes that you should work over the holidays and probably evenings and weekends too, so that you can get ahead of your competition, is not in the right frame of mind.
Yeah, no, definitely not. I noticed this. This is weird. I noticed this with skiing. My main goal in life is to, like, not die. Until, like, I have to.
Really?
Okay. So I didn't want to die in a mountain in France.
That's valid.
So I would, especially, like, in the mornings, I'd be, like, especially, like, in the first couple of days, I'd be quite, like, careful. It was, like, the conditions were a little bit tricky the first couple of... It was beautiful, like, the second half of the trip, but the first couple of days, like, the conditions were quite tricky. So I would be quite careful. And then, like, my friend was like, oh, why don't you go a little bit faster? Which just stressed me out even more.
Oh, no.
And then I would, like tense up. And then I would ski super badly. Or not super badly, but I wasn't skiing as well as I could. And then, like, the moment I just kind of, like, took in the beautiful scenery and relaxed, I could go really quickly and I was skiing really well. And it was such a, like, a cool thing to observe in my mind because... Like, my family has told me loads of times that, like, I don't have to be stressed and I shouldn't be stressed and all that kind of thing. But, like, with skiing, it was just so clear. Like, if I was stressed, I basically skied like I'd never skied before in my life. And then the moment I let go of everything, I'd be like, whoosh, 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 like all the way down the mountain, like no problem. And it was just such like a valuable learning experience.
This like this is a principle. This is reality level two.
Oh.
I recently had a huge reminder of this too. I'm getting really excited because we're talking about these reality levels and they're making sense. I had the exact same realization. I've been doing lots of jiu-jitsu since I moved to Colorado, and I think training with a new team has been nerve-wracking for me, and I've been very stressed and I want to still be good, but I was like stressing out. So going into every single one of my fights, I would start being like, what if this happens? Or what if they get me like this and I don't know what to do? Or what happens here? Like, am I going to look silly? And like recently, maybe a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago, I just went into a fight and I was feeling really zen. And like, I don't know if I'd read the Daily Stoic that day or what, but I was just like, you know, what happens, happens. I've been doing this for a couple of years now. I can probably figure out what I'm doing without stressing myself out. And I went really relaxed and I super chilled. And I won all my fights that night. And this was just in class. This wasn't like a competition or anything. But since then, I've changed my frame of mind for every fight I go into to be super relaxed and just trust in my own abilities and not yes. pressure myself or like psych myself out in my head. And I have been such a better competitor for it. It's been amazing. I feel like I can slow-mo see things. And I'm like, oh, I know what's coming when they do that. And I know how to respond. It's been crazy. I'm so happy that you had this realization too, because it feels to me like a valuable life lesson or AKA principle.
Yes. Oh my God, I literally got goosebumps when you were saying that. Like, I'm so glad you don't think I'm crazy for, like, talking like this.
No, I don't think you're crazy. Come on. You hired me. Our last episode was titled Super Ninja Grandma. There's really nowhere else we can't go. Like, we're going to be fine.
Yeah, it's so cool that you just had this, like, parallel experience almost, because it was so cool to be able to, like, see your mind at work almost. I don't know. I don't know why this hasn't happened earlier. Maybe this is like a, I don't know.
I mean, you have to reflect on it before the principle really takes place, right? Like, you can make the same mistake many times in a row, which is what I was doing with jiu-jitsu. And if you don't take yourself to that second level of reality where you look back at your mistake and you say, why did this happen? What can I improve? What can I do differently? What principle mm-hmm. can I apply in the future? Then you're never going to learn the takeaway. And I don't even think I realized that it was a mistake to be stressing out.
Yeah.
But it is, like, in retrospect, it's a mistake because it was messing with my mind. It was making me a poor competitor and I was losing as a result. And it was honestly the night that this clicked was such a good night. I felt like I was walking on a cloud and I was like, wow, I just like casually, really calmly won all my fights. And some of them were against people that I was very intimidated by, and I won against them multiple times. I couldn't believe it. It was insane. Oh, thank you. It was so crazy. So I'm very happy for both of us. This was a fun principle to learn and to be able to talk about right as we're talking about getting to reality level two of principles.
Yeah, it's just so satisfying to definitely, because I don't know, like, I definitely had anxiety in the past. I feel like I've been seeing some like ugly, ugly versions of anxiety in some of the people I know personally. And obviously you can't just be like, why don't you just stop being anxious? You know, there's a lot of work that goes into like working yourself. And I actually remember I've been doing quite a lot of reflection this week. And I was reflecting on my kind of journey. And the first thing I did was make sure, because I noticed to be able to do my work at like a high, because my work requires me to perform consistently at a high level. And the first thing I did when I started my job was to have a better diet.
Yes.
And like, I didn't go on a diet. I just knew, I was like, okay, I need sustenance. Like, I need to be able to perform my job. And if, like, it's not even that just I'm hungry. It's like, I don't even have the energy to solve this problem or work my way through this or write this up. Like, I need food that is good for me. And literally what I did first, I remember this so clearly. First thing I did is I set a reminder for myself. I used an app called Jew because it's the worst and most annoying app ever because it doesn't stop reminding you till you've done it. So it is like this annoying alert. And I put breakfast on that app And it wouldn't stop till I'd like started preparing my breakfast, because I wasn't going to prepare my breakfast and then not eat my breakfast, you know?
Yeah.
And by having breakfast every morning, like a really strict breakfast, it would make sure I was hungry at the right times throughout the day. So just by doing that one thing, it kind of put my whole food schedule, like it just fell into place almost.
Yeah.
And like to this day, this was quite a long time ago, like to this day, I like schedule food in my calendar.
Just I was because, about to mention that.
Just because it also creates like blocks of time. So yeah. Basically I have like before breakfast, obviously I don't do anything before breakfast. Then I have like breakfast to lunch, which is like one unit, which normally is like a work unit. And then I have like a meeting at 4:30. And then I try to also have like a little snack then, even though I don't do that really well. So that's like another block of time, like from lunch to like 4:30. And then normally I finish work at like 6 or 6:30. And then that's like a third block for the day. And because it's in my calendar, I get like these notifications on my screen. It's like lunch. And I don't want to go on lunch because I'm doing something. But it's like, well, your opinion of this matter is irrelevant. This is when you lunch.
This is when you lunch. I like that a lot. That's something that I've struggled with, the whole stopping work, eating at the right time, finishing work even. This was especially difficult when I was living alone. And as someone who really enjoys my work, it was very easy to start work at 8 and end work at 8 and not necessarily leave home in that time. Like loving your work and working from home was stressful for me. But you were the one that said you should schedule meals and things. And I ended up scheduling classes in the evening that I went to. So that was helpful. But yeah, I know that you've talked about this before, and that is, or at least to me, not on the podcast necessarily, but that is definitely a really good system to have in place too.
Yeah, I remember actually when we were in Barcelona, a lot of your colleagues would kind of like they would just kind of like not, we would often go to like a co-working space in the afternoon, and they often just wouldn't leave. Like their evenings would just kind of creep up and they just would still be working. And there was this guy, and he, like, I know what he's doing is quite complicated. And so he has to, like, use his brain at his full capacity, like, to do, not that all of your other colleagues don't do that, but, like, I know for him specifically, like, and I remember saying to him, I was like, dude, you have to be as strict about, what, like, the time you finish work as the time you start work. And I guess I was a little bit momish, but he was like, that's actually a really good rule.
But it's Javi walking in and like laying down the rules. This is how you should be doing your life.
but it's so true, especially like if you're doing something that you enjoy, it's really easy just to like stretch it out, but for no reason. And it's also easy to be like, oh, I'll just work a little bit later. But this is not your best work. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of routines and eating at the right time, finishing work at the right time, how's the Colorado routine coming along?
Well, that is a good question. I feel like I've recently figured a couple of things out. One is that I need to leave home during the week. It's just so easy to live in the middle of nowhere and work from home and not leave. And mm-hmm. I need a little bit of accountability for this. And I have a friend who also studies while I work. And we meet up on Fridays for a couple of hours at a coffee mm-hmm. shop. And it has totally changed my work experience. Because yeah. I know that on Fridays I go co-working. It's just been really, really helpful to have that as a part of my calendar and know, oh, I can't schedule meetings around that. I also, my boyfriend comes home for lunch most days when he's not traveling. So that yeah. is just, you were just talking about meals. That is a really good consistent factor in my life that I know he's going to be home at around 11:30. So I might as well take a break while he's home and take mm-hmm. time to eat lunch and eat lunch with someone else. And I think there was a book, I've honestly never read this book, but I think of the title lots, which is called Never Eat Alone and Other Rules for Some Sort of like yeah. Successful Life. And I think that I'll link to that in the show notes in case anyone does want to read it and let me know if it's good. But I think that's a good one too, to be able to have. So I have this routine of having lunch with someone at the same time every day, co-working with someone at the same time every Friday.
Okay, sorry.
Oh, sorry. You have a question.
No, I just have like a little, this is becoming like my biggest pet peeve at the moment. Like I work in a co-working space and somehow the culture is now everybody eats lunch at their desks.
Oh my goodness.
And I am like, okay, what is wrong with everyone? First, gross. like a toast or something, fine, whatever. But when people have their like hot and smelly Thai food and Indian food like next to somebody who's working, like I genuinely think that's like crossing a boundary. Also, like, you're not working when you're eating noodles. Like, you are focused on not getting noodles everywhere. Like, so you might as well step away from the desk for like the 15 minutes it takes to like finish that food.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to call people out too much, but like there's these people who I like sit with quite often, and they know I quite like having lunch and sitting at the lunch area, like, and I don't really like eating at my desk because there is a lunch area, like you might as well use it. And so I kind of like tempted them to come join me for the lunch area, and there was this one other person sitting there, and turned out it was valuable for them to speak to each other because they could like help each other out with something.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, this is why we sit in a co-working space filled with like smart people who are working on similar things. It's like to make these connections. If everybody's just sitting privately, like watching a YouTube video while they're eating their lunch, like you might as well just work by yourself somewhere. Like, why would you go to a co-working space if you're not gonna like utilize it to its advantages, kind of thing?
Yes. I also have a thing about eating and doing something else at the same time, because it takes your brain long enough to register that you are actually full. It's very difficult for your brain to register that you're eating if you're focused on something else too. So sometimes it's just bad for your health, because you might want to eat again later, or you might not, like, your brain might not process that you've eaten. There's all sorts of articles and research on this, and it's not a good idea to do that.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm using this little like moment to be like, even if one person one time, I know this is a cliche to say this, doesn't eat their lunch at their desk, I feel like this is like a net win. I don't understand how this culture became acceptable. I think this is highly related to this busyness concept.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, I'm so busy, I couldn't possibly take 10 minutes.
You know, okay. Sorry, you said I'm so busy I couldn't possibly take 10 minutes. There is a Tony Robbins quote. He was interviewed on Marie Forleo's show, and he said, if you don't have 10 minutes, you don't have a life.
That's so smart.
And he's Tony Robbins. He runs multiple like billion-dollar businesses. So for him to say that he has this time, but he said, if you don't have 10 minutes, you don't have a life. And I completely agree.
Yeah. But then you were saying something else about your routine. So now you do lunch, which is very good to like have lunch with somebody else.
Yeah, I think.
And then what else do you do?
Well, so here's the thing. I've lived in cities in my whole adult life, because that's very close to who I am as a person, to be able to live in a city and walk places and find new cool cafes and all these kinds of things. I now live in the suburbs, and I live in a smaller city than I've lived in since I was in high school. This is the smallest place that I've lived. So I have been struggling a little bit, and I'm also the kind of person, I don't like having a lot of belongings or owning things necessarily. So I've never, not since high school, and it was my parents' car, I haven't had a car. So I have been living here without a car, living in the suburbs, thinking that I could have the same lifestyle. And recently when my boyfriend traveled, I had access to his car during the day, and my life is now completely different, and I'm buying a car. Buying or leasing, I can't really decide. I don't know much about cars. I'm going to have other people in my life who are experienced with cars help me with this. But I had my Canadian driver's license changed over to a Colorado license, which is very exciting. Yeah. And so now I'm going to get a car. And I think that it was almost, I was stuck in my ways of, this is my life, I don't own a car, I can fit my life in a couple of suitcases, that's who I am. And it was difficult for me to adjust to, now I live in a small town. If I don't have a car, I have no freedom, and I am very limited in the things that I can do. So I have had access to a car, it's changed my life, now I need a car. And the funny thing is, one of our mutual friends, a colleague that I work with, she visited you in Iceland.
Yeah.
She's from Colorado. And she told me before I moved here that I have to get a car. And I was like, yeah. And even her boyfriend messaged me, and he was like, I heard you don't have a car, you should get a car. And I was like, yeah, sure. I didn't listen to anyone. It took me being...
You don't know this? They said this to me.
Yeah.
They were like, Haley needs to get a car.
They are so funny. They're so on the ball. For some reason, I didn't take other people's knowledge into account, which was not living on the level two of reality where you learn from others. I only listened to myself, but I have since learned from my mistake, and I'm gonna work on one of the things about principles is that you don't need to learn them only from your own life. You can learn them from others. I should have learned this from others, but I did not. But now I know.
Yeah, I remember when I was young, I was always like, why is being humble seen as such a good quality?
What?
Like, why, if you know stuff, isn't that just great? Like, why do you have to be all like, but, you know, I'm open to being wrong and all this. I have since changed my mind.
I'm glad that you have. You're so funny.
I find it really, I've noticed this about myself as well. Like, I find it really difficult to be around people who just don't listen. I'm like,
yeah.
How are you going through life? This is why I loved everybody at your company, by the way. Like, it was so easy to connect with everybody because everybody was, like, such a good listener. And when I asked about it, all of you were like, oh, yeah, it's one of our values.
Yes.
Which I was kind of like, I didn't think people actually... I thought this was maybe just content for the website. I didn't know this was, like, completely ingrained into, like, the culture.
Oh, my gosh. This is a total...
Yeah, this is a different topic.
Well, I was just going to say, I have stickers with our values on them if you want me to send you one, but these are we talk about our values probably daily. Like, this is very,
we should talk about this some other time because this is actually really interesting.
We should.
And I think my kind of like prejudices against, oh, you can actually have values that you live by and it's not just like website filler, is like, I think that also shows like an interesting perspective.
Yes.
But I know after being in Barcelona with all of you that like, this is not a joke. This is a very real thing.
I am so glad you think that. I also wanted to mention, and you said this, but you were in France recently.
Mm-hmm.
And you had lots of lessons that came out of France.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to hear, did you have like a summary of lessons? I know that in the show notes, I see several bullet points. So there's a lot to talk about your time in France.
So you know how like you have friends, right?
I try.
And then this is actually quite related to what we were talking about. And then when you travel with them, you see like a different side of them. Like not necessarily a different side, but you just see more of them. So you see more of things they just would do normally like in private. And so I had this experience with my friends where they were doing that. And I was like, oh, this is why we're friends. Because one of my favorite things was my friend who I was skiing with was like doing something on his computer because he was like, it took him like a second to get the hang back of skiing because skiing is quite, you know, like there are some tricks and once you know them, like you're kind of fine. And he needed to like remind himself of those like little tricks. And then when we got back to the flat, he was like making these notes and I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I'm writing notes to my future self who goes skiing to look up these principles for skiing.
Oh, I love that so much.
And I was like, this is the nerdiest, dorkiest thing I've ever seen someone do. And then I immediately opened my phone and did like the exact same thing.
What? Yeah, of course you did. Okay, I think the nerdy, dorky part about this is just that he called it notes to future self.
I think that actually comes from myself. He just I didn't read his computer screen. I have a strict rule against that.
Okay.
He just said this was like notes about skiing. So for an example, one of the ones I learned is after the first day, like my feet really, 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 really hurt. Not really when I was skiing, but when I was like walking in the ski shoes, like between places.
Yeah.
And then we went back to like the equipment hire place and I was like, super useful. And they were like, oh, when you have your socks that like cut off halfway through your calves, it creates like a lot of pressure on like one point of like your shins and that makes your feet really hurt. So you have to make sure you have a completely flat surface underneath your ski shoes.
Wow. That's a good pro tip.
And I was like, yeah, this is worth remembering next time I go skiing.
Okay. I'm going to say that I don't think that taking notes about things that you've learned is dorky. I think that the fact that you called it notes to future self on your own in these show notes is the dorky part. And I do love it. And I do this as well. But I think that it's hilarious that you called it notes to future self, because I thought it would be like letters that you were writing to your future self, but it's not.
Everything I do is just completely practical. So then the same friend, he also, I actually gave him the Daily Stoic book for Christmas.
I love it.
Shocking. And he said to me, like, because he wasn't in the group for some reason, but I said, he said to me, he was like, and it was really genuine, so I really appreciate it. He was like, wow, thanks, Happy. I'm getting a lot out of this book. And it was just really genuine. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then I noticed he was using this app, and he would like use it in the morning and in the evenings. And I was like, what is that? And he was, oh, it's a journaling app.
Oh, I've heard of those. Which one is it?
It's called 5-Minute Journal.
This is exactly like the book that I was talking about before. I used a book for this, and there is an app. Also, the app version is the same. I think it's the same as the book. Well, anyways, that's incredible.
And I was like, oh, this is also why we're friends. Not only are you really enjoying the Daily Stoic, but it was weird because he would do the journaling like in as much privacy as he possibly could, like given the situation we were like sharing a flat together.
Yeah.
But like I obviously still noticed. And I was like, okay. But then now I've switched to the app because the paper book was just annoying me because it was like I have to remember to take it with me and stuff. So
oh, you've switched to the app? Okay. Yeah. I'm gonna say that this makes total sense because I think it was in our last episode you mentioned that you weren't even following the questions anyways. Yeah. So I honestly had no idea why you needed a specific Daily Stoic journal and couldn't just use any old blank notebook. So I am glad that you're journaling in an app now.
Yeah. Then my other friend who was with us on this journey, she was really concerned about making sure all of us were paying our share really fully, like nobody was getting any more or less money out of each other.
Oh, that's the thing about traveling with friends. Money, yeah.
money is really, it's for like 99% of situation, like that would have been really sweet. But like the group I was in, like they're probably not like two people I would trust more to like not get a sneaky drink in without paying for. So I was like, this is adorable but also kind of funny. And then after like the first few days or something, she used this app called Splitwise.
Yep.
And she like painstakingly entered in like every receipt from the trip of like every, because we just always like one of us would just pay for things and we would just like rotate. She like entered in all the data, who paid for what, who owed what to whom, whatever. And then after this whole big gym exercise, she spent over an hour doing this. She found out that she owed me 43 euro cents.
Oh, dear.
So I actually found it quite validating that my system of like, I'll get this one and you get the next one actually works pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. I mean, it is a good app, definitely. But I can see how in some situations it's just not necessary.
Our other friend who was like a CTO of his own company looked at this app and the like hours of man hours of that have gone into making an app like this. I was like, oh man, for this result.
Oh, that's terrible.
The final app I was introduced to on this journey, I think you might like this. It's a habit tracker, like the Streaks and the Productive we were talking about last time, but it you share it with a friend.
Oh, that's neat. What's it called?
Habit Tracker.
Oh, well, that's pretty straightforward. And so you add people, so like you and I could see each other's habits?
Yeah. So like, yeah. So let's say like journaling is something you want to do every day. And so my friend who was journaling and reading the Daily Stoic, he would have like a habit tracker. So he would do like a check when he had finished his journaling. And it just looked so pretty. And I was like, I have to send this to Hayley.
I also feel like if you're using a habit tracker that your friends can see if you're doing your habits, that that adds a really interesting level of accountability to the work that you're putting in.
Yeah. And it's like, can you imagine being like, I don't know if I feel like yoga right now. And then a notification pops up on your screen. Hayley just did yoga. I'd be like, fine.
Oh, because we're in different time zones, it probably wouldn't happen at the same time. No. It would probably be more beneficial to me because you would wake up in London and do all your good habits. And then I would wake up and you would have already accomplished like 5 to 11 things. And I would feel really motivated. I would be like, well, Abby is doing so many things today. I need to follow suit.
See, I feel like I'd be really stressed about doing this with you because I feel like I would just constantly be letting you down.
Oh my goodness. I'm sure that you wouldn't.
I think same time zone is probably beneficial for this.
Yes. Yes. We don't need to do this together. It's just enough to know that we could, to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh.
It's a big step to like habit tracks shared together. Like, I didn't want to like push our relationship to this limit. I just wanted to tell you that this exists.
This is a real relationship limit. Like my mother and my sister and I all use Fitbits to track our steps and our level of activity throughout the day. And we've all added each other as friends. So I can see the average daily steps that my mom and my sister take. But I don't want to know that information about anyone else. And I don't want anyone else to have that information about me.
No.
And it's not even that much information. It's just daily average steps. And still, it's something that for some reason I just don't want to share with everyone.
It's really personal. Like he only had one friend and it's like one of his best friends.
Yeah.
Like he... Like, this is not like, oh, you just add all your Facebook friends. Like, imagine.
No. Oh, my gosh. That would be terrible. No. Yeah, I do like that system. It's funny for the Fitbit because my mom challenged me to a step challenge this week. And it's like, I could see that being fun with other people.
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt more motivated to go on long walks this week because I want to beat my mom.
It's crazy how effective these things are when it's like when you're only accountable to yourself, like that's one thing. But when you're accountable, this is why private trainers work, you know?
Yeah.
Or like personal trainers where it's like, I'm asking you to do this and you're not going to let me down, are you? Do you know what I mean? It's just like this, you're doing it in front of somebody else.
I feel like the fact that it is a family member or friend is even better than a personal trainer who might be a stranger, because there's that social relationship that you don't want to mess up also, right? Like if you and I were yoga buddies and we did yoga together every morning and a couple mornings I was just like, nah, I don't want to anymore, like that would kind of cause a wrinkle in our social fabric, you know?
I know one of my friends, I don't know if we mentioned this on the podcast, but at least I'm a massive fan of Yoga with Adrienne, which is YouTube channel where she does all sorts of yoga videos, but like her biggest kind of feats are like these 30-day yoga challenges, and she did a new one for 2018 like in January, and me and my friend were like, oh, she would do it and be like accountability buddies, and she's really good at boundaries. She was like, yes, but also no.
That is really good at boundaries, because I would have said yes and not thought about it,
because she was like, I don't want you to be like, have you done your yoga? And then I haven't. And then I don't want to apply to you, but maybe I want to talk to you about something else. But this yoga thing is getting in the way. And I was like, you're so good at predicting future conflicts.
You're so smart. Yes. That was a really smart reaction on her part. Good for her.
So you're doing a reading challenge as well with your sister. So it's not just a step challenge. You're also doing a reading challenge with your family. Your family sounds... so cute.
So cute / competitive. Yes, I am
very competitive.
I do a reading challenge with my sister every year. Last year I feel like we sort of let the ball drop a little bit, but this year the game's back. So I'll explain. In 2016, my sister sent me this letter. I was living in San Francisco at the time, and my whole family sends snail mail. This is the other random fact about us. Aww, so my sister sent me a letter. So cute. And it's getting a little bit too much. I love them though. But I meant too much cuteness. Not too much. I'm sorry. Okay. So my sister sent me a letter, and she had printed out the Pop Sugar reading challenge for 2016. And I can't remember if it was 40 or 50 books, but they're all different categories. And you have to see how many different books you can read in these categories by the end of the year. And so there were things like a book that has a blue cover, or a book that has, your favorite color in the title, or a book about death. You know, like there's a lot of different, mm-hmm. a lot of different categories. The reason that it's a challenge, it's supposed to be a personal challenge because you're challenged to read different kinds of books that you might not normally pick up.
Oh,
but my sister added this extra layer of challenge to it where she has, both of us have the list and we try to see who can read the most. And then that person buys the other a cup of coffee or something.
There's a lot of effort for a cup of coffee there.
It's kind of, it's just like fun because
it's a symbolic cup of coffee.
It's fun because you get to talk about the books that you're reading and which ones you've checked off and which ones are difficult. So we let the ball drop a little bit last year, but this year she sent me the PDF and I happen to have just purchased a printer, which feels like a really adult thing. I didn't used to have a printer, but I printed it off.
I had to do that and I was so sad about that.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I'm glad that okay, I'm really happy you understand. But we but I have put this on the Make Work Work Instagram account. So if you follow us, you've probably seen me posting that the reading challenge is on and I've been checking things off. And this is the challenge. It's a challenge between me and my sister. And I'm doing
so cool.
Pretty well right now. I have quite a few checked off because I've been listening to audiobooks like it's my job. Like if I'm driving somewhere, I'm listening to audiobooks. If I'm doing dishes, I'm listening to audiobooks. If I'm like anything, like brushing my teeth, listening to audiobooks. So I have been really keen on those. So that's helped with my score. So we're in February and I think I'm at 8 or 9 books. That's
really cool.
It's been a little crazy so far.
I actually just checked. This is why I think it's so interesting how like just different people operate. Because this kind of pressure, I find it really like paralyzing. Like, I don't think this would work on me because I would just be like, oh, I'm not living up to the challenge. This is like, again, like, my anxiety side.
Yeah.
So when I was setting my reading goal for 2018, I was like, I don't want to have to stress about this. So I'm just going to set it at 20.
Yeah.
Even though I read 25 last year. And the weird way my brain works is I'm already at 7.
Yes. So I agree with this.
You know how it's so funny how different people work? You're like, oh, I'm in a competition. This is so motivating. I'm going to read all of the books. Whereas I would just be like, oh, she's probably doing so much better than me. You know?
Yeah, I have so many different sides of opinions on this. I don't remember if I've talked about this on the podcast, but last year I tried to set a goal where I would read 100 books in a year. And it really only took like 3 weeks to a month in for me to realize that would take the fun away from reading. So I got rid of that goal. And my Goodreads reading challenge goal is for this year. Also, it's 25. So aim to read about a book a month or about 2 books a month, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I'm already at 8, right? So like I've experienced the same thing as you. I think with this challenge, it's more fun because it's not read as many books as you want. It's read different kinds of books than you would usually read. And then it gives my sister and I mean, we both have tons of things to talk about, but it's a nice conversation topic too, to be like, oh, I've checked off the one where, you know, you have a time of day in the title and it's like, oh, what book was that? Like, that's really cool. And I was telling my manager about this challenge and I mentioned that I had to read a book about death or grief, or like it, I don't have to, but it was one of the check marks. And he said, oh, there's a really good book on death, that I can recommend to you that I liked. So it's been more of a conversation starting point for me and less of a source of stress, but I can absolutely see how it might be a source of stress. To some people, and I'm sure many people actually.
I actually think this is a really, like, because I've talked about on the podcast before how sometimes I find like reading books stressful because I'm like, oh, I have to be reading the right kinds of books and blah, blah, blah. But I can actually see how something like this, which is like, oh, you're just looking for the most fun-looking blue book, could actually be quite like a way to take the pressure off because it actually doesn't really matter. Do you, like, yeah.
Do you, okay.
I have one thing which I thought was pretty funny. So
what?
When we were in France, there was this evening where like my friend I was with was kind of like fidgety and like restless. And you know how I follow the Ryan Holiday policy of just buying all of the books when I see them?
Yes.
So as you can imagine, my Kindle library is becoming quite extensive.
Yes.
And I didn't really realize this until, so my friend was a little bit restless and I literally handed her my iPad. I was like, why don't you, oh yeah. So she had like a really heavy nonfiction with her that was like really technical and really hard to read. She actually had the innovators.
Okay.
And, you know, it's just not a super fun read when you're on a skiing trip. So I was like, why didn't you just take the pressure off yourself and read something else? And she didn't have anything else with her. So that's why I gave her my iPad. And she was so excited going through my library. She was like, oh, you have this book I recommended. Oh, you have this. And literally we spent like 25 minutes just going through my Kindle library.
Oh my gosh.
Which I haven't done, but this was literally like a social fun activity. And then she was scrolling through and she was asking about this book and that book. And I was like, yeah, I haven't read that one still. Or I read that one. It's great, whatever. But we were both kind of feeling like holiday vibes. So we didn't want to read anything super heavy. And then she was like, well, if you haven't read all of these books, why don't we find a book that you haven't read and read it both together?
Oh, I like that.
And I was like, yeah, actually, that's super cool. Let's do that. Because I obviously had multiple devices with me. So reading on my Kindle on multiple devices was not a problem. And you're never going to guess which book she picked.
Is it Shantaram?
No.
No. Oh, because you've read that one.
Yeah. You've read this book.
Okay.
Because I told you about it, but I hadn't read it.
Oh, yes. I know what one you're talking about.
Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Yes. It was The Girl Who Was Raised by Monkeys. I don't remember I don't think I'm saying the title right.
Yeah. So I actually don't think we've mentioned this on the podcast, but this was... I do go to quite a lot of events and things in London where I meet like lots of different people. And there was this one event almost like a year ago now where I went with my friend and we were sitting at this table and there's this girl we didn't know. And she was just like talking, whatever. And then literally like in passing, she mentioned that she'd written a book and we were both like, whoa. And then she just kind of let it slip that it was also a New York Times bestseller. And we were like, wait, what? Like, you don't lead with that.
Like, I thought it was a Sunday Times bestseller.
I'm sorry.
I don't remember. When you first told me, it was like some UK newspaper that I didn't know very well.
I don't know. It was one. Anyway, it was a bestseller. And we were like, so what's the book? And she was like, oh, I just decided to write a memoir of my mom's life. And my friend was like, why would your mom's life be interesting? Like, not in a rude way, just in like a conversation anyway. And she was like, oh, the short version was that she... was like born and raised in Colombia, got kidnapped at the age of 4 or 5, got left in the jungle, was raised by monkeys, and was then like made.
Should we say spoilers before this? Because that's the whole book.
This was how I was introduced to the book, and this is how I told you about the book.
So, no, you didn't tell me about the
about the brothel
portion. You just said raised by monkeys.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maybe I'll just bleep that out. Anyway, so this was how I was introduced to the book. And I was like, okay. And I just bought it then and there. But then I didn't read it, but I told you about it because you used to spend quite a lot of time in Colombia.
Yes.
And you read it like a long time ago as well.
I read it probably 2 weeks after you told me about it. And I read the full thing, like cover to cover really quickly. I'll include the link, of course, because it was an absolutely amazing story. And I still think of that book sometimes. That's how good it was. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm so happy that you're going to be reading that book because I want to talk to you about it as well.
No, I've read it. I read it in France.
Oh, you've already read it. Great.
So I just want to... I actually managed to get through 3 books in France. And I do... measure holidays and how many books I'm able to finish. So I was quite pleased.
That's an interesting holiday measurement. Did you start that a long time ago?
It was when I was in Ibiza, of all places, with a friend for 2 or 3 days. And I didn't really like Ibiza. And I thought it was kind of a cliche to be there. So I just lay on the beach and read 3 books in those 2 or 3 days. One of which was The Book Thief, which was fantastic.
Yes.
And for those that don't know, that book happens in like Nazi Germany, so during the Second World War. And the kind of big scary thing at the time is all these like planes flying over, dropping bombs on the cities. And the place where we were staying was right on the beach, but it was also right beneath the flight path of the airplanes. Whoa. So my soundtrack to this was like these constant airplanes coming in as I was reading like about this like horrifically intense experience. So that was like one of the most like deep and intense booking experience I've probably ever had. Like in Ibiza.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah. So was France was a 3-book holiday?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that the record?
I might be. I feel like I haven't tracked this officially well enough. But 3 to me is a pretty good number. Yeah.
I think 3 is a great number.
Yeah, 3 is pretty good, I think. Like in 7 days, I feel like that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Other one I read that was interesting was called Hillbilly Elegy. Have you heard about this?
Wait, eulogy or elegy?
Elegy.
Oh. Elegy. No, I don't think I have heard of this.
It's basically like this, also like a memoir. Clearly, I'm just interested in people at the moment. it's this man who is... It was kind of a funny experience for me because I started reading the book and I only realized like a third way through that this was like an actual person talking about his actual life. And it's about this guy who is raised in like, his family is from like the Appalachian Mountains and he is raised basically in the kind of like poor but white parts of America where there's quite a lot of social problems. And it's basically about his journey with that. And it's really, really interesting, especially like now when I think there's like a lot of like division, like not just in the US, but also like in the UK between like where people live and that kind of thing. It was just a really interesting story to read.
I think that I've heard of this book on a podcast that I listen to. So I'm excited when you send me the link for the show notes, I'm going to check it out because I feel like I've heard of this one before.
Yeah, I think this was like all over like the last year's bestseller lists and best book lists and stuff. It was just so like this guy kind of lucked out just because it was so topical.
Yes, with the current political climate.
Yeah, like when he started, I'm guessing like when he started writing it, like because it doesn't take like 2 months to write a book, so I think this was like work in progress for him for quite some time, and it just so happened it came out exactly at the right time. And
yeah,
it was exactly like when people were kind of like, okay, here's like this whole group of people everybody's been ignoring, and here's somebody telling that story from like their side.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. You read some great books.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good. Skiing in France. Definitely recommend if you get the chance.
A 3-book vacation.
Yeah. They should put that on the flyers.
They should put that. I'm sure everyone would understand. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I hope. I wonder if I've taken a 3-book vacation. I feel like I have, but it's not coming to mind right now.
This is going to become like a yardstick for you now, Ryan.
Absolutely. It absolutely is.
We had like a super long travel day the last day that definitely, definitely helped with getting, you know, that third one in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I love reading on planes. I'm taking a flight tomorrow and I'm like loading up my Kindle and charging it. I feel like I don't care about charging my Kindle. Because it's usually fine until I'm about to travel. And then I'm like, I need 100% battery for this. Like, I'm going to be in the airport and I just need battery.
The thing is, what I'm becoming like tuned into is that the flight time is like the least of your worries when you're traveling. It's especially in London, like getting to the airport is almost like more annoying than any other part of your journey.
I live 12 minutes from the little airport here, so I'm good. I just do not have the same thing going on.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah. So where are you going?
I'm going to Las Vegas. I've never been before.
Look at you.
I'm very excited. I have done no research, which I usually do beforehand. And all of my impressions of Vegas are things that I've seen in movies. So should be fun.
If I can have one recommendation for you.
Have you been?
If you're able to go to a Cirque du Soleil. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Cirque du Soleil?
Cirque du Soleil is Canadian, Abby. Of course I know what you're talking about. I've seen them all over the world. Yeah, I'm lucky. Oh. But I mean, I think it's just like a phenomenon. I don't know. I thought that it was like just Canadians that are obsessed with this, but I can see that it's a global thing. But I mean, I'm lucky to have seen them in some pretty cool spots. But they're from Montreal.
Okay, so I have spent quite a lot of this week putting together like a top 100 tours of 2017.
Yeah.
And I've been doing quite a lot of like data analysis to be like, here's interesting things you can find if you read into the data kind of thing. So I've been looking at that list a lot. And Cirque du Soleil was 8 out of the 100 entries for 2017.
Oh my gosh.
And if you would count all of them as one, which they don't do, they count like each show as its own thing, that would have been like the highest grossing live performance on the whole planet for 2017.
I'm not even surprised. Okay, Cirque du Soleil being on all of the top performance lists to me is like Harry Potter being on all of the top Amazon lists every time.
I have never been to one.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
You should. Well, it's funny that you're recommending that I go to one then. You
have yeah, been well, to one. Yeah, well, it seems to be like exceptional. You need to.
Okay. Also, take your own advice here.
Canada. Yeah, exactly. Well, I saw there's like articles to recommend like which one you go to see. But like the place to go see them is obviously in Las Vegas. So that's why I kind of was like, you should go see one if you could.
You know what I just found out
yeah.
is in Las Vegas, and I think this is particularly relevant to you because I saw either a tweet or an Instagram post about this, but Britney Spears is a resident of, she's like always doing shows in Las Vegas.
Okay. One of my favorite things about you, Haley, is how little you know about music. Like when I had to explain Spotify to you is one of my treasured memories.
Wait, but you just bought a ticket to a Britney Spears show. I thought this would be exciting to you.
So Britney Spears has had a residency in Vegas for about 4 or 5 years, and it ended on New Year's of 2017. And now she's taking the show on tour.
Oh.
But I really, really, really appreciate the update.
I tried really hard for you. I know nothing about music. I tried really hard for you, Heavy.
That is a very appropriate way to end this year.